find such a love at our age? Whoever thought we could dance on a thrilling...
Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. And Judy, tell folks the title of this amazing episode.
Unpacking the Transformative Narratives in Sexual Fantasies, an interview with Artemisia Devine.
You know, we've had wonderful guests. Mm-hmm. She's really up there on the top of the list.
Yes, she is.
Up near the top of the list.
Yes, she is. So bright and insightful and... Wow,
and just knowledgeable and just interesting. I just found it fascinating. And sexy, really, because it's a very sexy topic.
It is a sexy topic, and she just has a lot of charisma.
She does, yes. So, folks, stay tuned. You're in for a treat.
Absolutely.
You can stay tuned for that. Before we get into that, though, it's funny, this sort of fits with the notion of erotic stuff requiring an obstacle.
Ah.
You know, one of the stories she tells and one of the things that I refer to in our conversation, I listened to one of her tapes, and she talks about the obstacle where somebody's about to act on this sort of desire, and then there's something, the boss calls the person away, and they can't, you know, that's what we're doing right now. I'm setting up this obstacle. I can tell you're saying, come on, get on with it already.
Yeah.
It's an obstacle. It's getting you more excited, right,
yes.
Folks? You should be more excited. Anyway, let's tell people about our books.
Ah, yes, about our books. Well, maybe we should start with
that one. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, since we're on a sexual fantasy, why don't we start with our sponsor, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
By Laria Zilber, also known as
yours truly.
Exactly, yes.
So yes, if since this is a show about sexual fantasies, this whole book is all about fantasies and acting out in erotic ways.
Yes, and so anybody who's been attracted to this episode by its title, by golly, get a hold of that book. Go to lariazilber.com, or you can just search for it on Amazon, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible. Not just The Blue Tent, because that'll get you blue tents.
That's right, you're going to go to Coleman.
Exactly. The Blue Tent, Erotic Fantasies,
Erotic Tales
from the Bible.
Right.
And that will get you to Laria's book and read it, and you will enjoy it greatly.
Or it's also available on audio and Kindle.
Exactly, and the audio done by Judy with her beautiful voice. So go for that. And then there's the books that I've written.
Yes, two of them, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
We have Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back, and It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy is Wrong.
Indeed. And, you know, it's funny. Some of the stuff that Artemisia talked about overlaps with some of the stuff I've written about in that book. If that's a teaser for you, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
People tell me that Reigniting the Spark is a book that just helps them feel better. It gives them this sort of sense of faith, you know.
Oops.
And I've also heard that a little bit about... It's Not About Communication, but that one is especially about, I never thought about that in terms of therapy, like how it works.
Right.
So you can get a hold of those Amazon, or if you go to ctn7.com, that's our website, or brucechalmer.com, which is my website, you'll find all sorts of information there. While you're at either of those, don't forget to sign up for my newsletter.
Right.
That's Dr. Chalmers' newsletter. And the last plug I will give is for a book that isn't even out yet, but I'm touting it now so that you'll get ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
The working title is Betrayal, Forgiveness, and Faith. It's all about betrayals and healing from betrayals.
Yeah.
And still interested, folks, if you have stories of that you want to share with me, I'd be happy if you drop me a line. You can do that via our website, ctn7.com. That's the number 7. So I think that's enough obstacles.
I think so.
Yes.
Without further ado, on to Artemisia.
We'll see you on the other side.
Our guest today is Artemisia Devine. Artemisia is an expert on sexual fantasies who has studied for over 30 years how turn-ons work. For 12 of those years, she was a sex worker and professional dominatrix. As Artemisia puts it, nothing teaches you more about the psychology of what turns us on and how sexual fantasies work than being paid to become the sexual fantasy of thousands of people. Living it gives you a perspective that a university degree can't touch. I was blown away by the surprising reactions of my clients when I trusted their fantasies and was willing to live them out within healthy boundaries. Artemisia has gone on to become a trainer of therapists and sexologists, teaching them how to make sense of sexual fantasies and craft experiences that satisfy the real desire behind the story symbolism. Her forthcoming book is The Spirituality of Smut, The Surprising Wisdom of Sexual Fantasies. Artemisia, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
I'm so happy that you invited me to have this juicy conversation with you.
Oh, we are delighted.
And we always like to start with our guests by asking, how did you get into this work? And in your particular situation, I'll bet that's a especially interesting story. Anyway, they're always, I won't say that. How did you get into the work you do? And, you know, what got you interested?
Isn't that thing, that saying true, that we teach what we need to learn ourselves? Mm. So I was afraid. I was afraid of my sexual fantasies. I didn't know what they were. I didn't understand them. They seemed to be about desires, about being treated and treating other people in ways that I really, really, really did not want to treat other people or be treated by other people in real life. Mm. So how do I even make sense of that? Mm. Like some of these things are quite taboo. Some of them included power dynamics that I absolutely did not want to experience in real life. Mm-hmm. But I am a curious cookie, and when I was at university, I just picked the subjects that I was drawn to, that I was fascinated to, and ended up getting a degree in anthropology because I just can't leave well enough alone. I have to work out what is going on here. How does it all work? What is the dynamics between humans here? What are the power dynamics? What do we mean by, you know, the symbolism of this thing? And anthropology is this wonderful discipline that, for instance, you could go right into gift giving. Who is it really for? How does each culture actually interpret what that means? Mm-hmm. And all sorts of social status and things involved in the simple act of giving a gift. Right. So putting myself through university, I was actually doing paying my own way through without any support from anybody else. And I was working very hard. And one of the jobs that I had was as a receptionist at a professional dungeon.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
My neighbor got me that job. She was awesome.
I've never heard of a professional dungeon. I mean, I've heard of, you know, places where one can go and experience things having to do with BDSM. Is that what that is?
Yes.
A professional dungeon. Yeah, I just have never heard it called that. So,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we call them, instead of calling it a brothel, you'll call it a dungeon.
Ah.
Okay.
A house of domination.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And then the first time, and I was happening to answer the phone. So I was having to hear what all of the clients were asking for the mistresses. And the dominas, what they were trying to do and try and match them with the right people. Mm-hmm. Boy, did that teach me a thing or two really quickly.
I'll bet it did.
Wow, yeah.
I thought I knew about sex before that because I was already really curious. I'd already had an awful lot of sex in my life, mm-hmm. Just to explore it and find out what on earth this thing was all about.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I was pretty experienced. But going into the sex industry absolutely blew my mind right open. I learned so much about humans. Mm. When you get to be up close and personal to their inner psyche and actually on an embodied level play with their inner psyche with them, you really learn some interesting things about humans you cannot learn from university. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. So I was applying also a little bits of my anthropology lens, even though I never actually ended up working in anthropology. Mm-hmm. It's just the way I was now trained to think and how I'm wired. And I eventually ended up doing sex work myself. And initially when I first started, I just wanted money, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure.
Right. And I didn't really know what I was doing. And I was doing not BDSM sex work. I was doing penetrative sex work and with a friend, and we had no clue what we were doing whatsoever. It's back in the times before we had GPSs in the cars, and I was we put an ad in the newspaper in a Victorian town because we thought, oh, we're not supermodels, we're ordinary girls next door. maybe the people in the country will be more forgiving. So we just put a 2-line ad in the newspaper and just started, the phone would ring off the hook, and then we would negotiate who we were going to go and see. And I had a panel van car at that stage. I like drove around my little panel van with my paper map trying to work out where on earth this farmer was.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And you would just go, I hope, like you let each other know where you were going in case, you know, just driving out to random houses sounds dangerous.
Right. So we didn't have a system. We had our each other, knowing each other. We had a little system where we would contact in front of the client that once mm-hmm. we'd arrived, we'd call each other to let them know. So then, and we'd call each other security. We'd say, hey, security, I've arrived.
good one.
And if it was coming close to the end, we'd be saying, I have to contact security otherwise, to let them know that you're either going to extend the time or leave, otherwise you're going to get a knock on the door. So, you know, we figured that much out. But I tell you what, later on, it was an awful lot easier once I connected with the networks of sex workers, because sex workers are incredibly savvy and really have an awful lot of amazing systems in place to keep things safe. But before, we didn't have that extra support. But what happened was I kept stumbling across these situations where I was just going there for the money. They had just seen a newspaper ad and not much else. And you know, they just wanted someone who was busty and blonde, basically. That was as sophisticated as it was. And they were already in the altered state of consciousness that is arousal, because it is an altered state of consciousness to be turned on.
So a form of trance, basically. I'm trained in hypnosis. One of the things I've done, I've often noted that it is, there's a lot of overlap there, I would think, right? It's the notion of arousal is kind of a state of trance in some ways. You filter out some stuff and enhance other stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, good. We're going to enjoy this conversation. Excellent. yes, it absolutely is. It already changes you into an altered state just to get aroused. They were already aroused. Mm-hmm. But what I discovered was when I got there, and I actually was able to meet their needs and trust where they were coming from. Because each one of them, everybody has this thing where they think the way that they do sex is just the way sex is. But each one of them was different. So I'm walking into this, like, it's almost like an improv, you know, acting improv thing where I don't know what's happening, but I've got to flow into the script and play the role. I need to figure out really quickly, are they wanting things to be smutty and primal? Are they wanting dirty talk? What kind of dirty talk? Because you can get that wrong really quickly. Are they looking for somebody who's innocent and sweet and a little bit standoffish, who then they get to feel big and powerful so that they can crack me open? Are they trying to get real intimacy? Do they need the social connection to become safe, to become aroused? Or is the social connection actually going to get in the way because they're trying to be primal? And if the wrong organ of the psyche, if you like, would be in the driver's seat if we're talking in a social context, right? Yeah. So I've got to figure all of this out on the fly. It turns out I'm really good at it. So,
well, and you know, it's funny. I said the same thing. I think you mentioned it for our listeners who didn't hear what we were talking about before. You mentioned you'd heard one of our earlier podcasts with, I'm remembering her name, Leanna Wolf, who's an anthropologist who then did a lot of exploring on her own and a lot of learning about sex work and a lot of stuff. And what was fascinating is she had the soul of an anthropologist when she was 10. It was pretty clear. And sounds like that's you too. You know, that there's something about that ability to inquire into the meaning of whatever's going on that as you're describing it, it sounds like, wow, you were really good at it. You know, you were focusing on that, and that would help you be.
So in a way you did become an anthropologist.
I really did. And you'll find out all about all of the details in that book that's coming up. I can't wait. Oh, it's so fun for me to share this stuff. Anyway, I really recommend everyone go back and listen to that episode. It's a fantastic episode. You did a great job with that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. While we're exchanging compliments about episodes, this is a spoiler alert for what you're going to talk about at some point. You might as well talk about it now. You have a freebie that you offer on your website, which I took advantage of in preparing for this and thoroughly enjoyed. It's not explicit. If people are worried about, oh, how explicitly sexy is it going to be? It wasn't. But I found it really an interesting experience. What I think it was about 44 minutes, something like that. And it was fascinating how you outlined, well, it's stuff very related to what you were just talking about, how you can set up expectations in such a way that it can be really arousing. And it was interesting because it was a non-explicit story you were telling, and you were comparing two different stories, but it was really, I felt that sense of excitement based on how you did it. You talked about the notion of obstacles. You didn't mention Jack Moran. Does that name ring a bell? He's the guy who wrote a
Oh,
book
yes.
called The Erotic Mind. Yeah, I mean, you study sexology, I'm sure you know about that. And he gives the erotic equation, which is do I get it right? Attraction plus obstacles equals excitement. You have to
Yeah.
have obstacles.
That's
So yeah,
so. So
so
anyway,
yeah, do
we
go on.
interrupted your
Yes.
stuff, so took a little sidetrack. So let's
Yeah.
get back on track with your journey. Oh, that's fine. Jack Moran's excellent. I wouldn't be where I am without standing on his impressive shoulders with the work that he did, his groundbreaking work. A pro-dom from Seattle, Catherine Control, an awesome pro-dom, by the way, really switched on intelligent person. She gave me one of the best compliments I've ever had in my life. She
That's
gave me
nice.
this. She said, when she was explaining to other people who I am and what my work was like, she said, if Jack Moran and Betty Martin is the creator of the Wheel of Consent. If Betty Martin and Jack Moran had a love child who then did years and years of sex work, that would be Artemisia Divine. I was like,
There you go.
yes.
Great. Oh. You've got a great pedigree there. Yeah.
Jack's work is as groundbreaking as it is. I've got a different angle to him. You can't move on until you have a platform to stand on. But because of his work, I could then take it further and explore even deeper. Because in his own words, he actually reduces all sexual fantasies to unfinished childhood and adolescent business. And I'm going to suggest the different angle. Well, that's true. Absolutely. Of course, we have our unfinished childhood and adolescent business interacting with every area of our life, including our sexuality. Of course, it comes through that. But I want to look at a different angle again, which is just the natural mechanisms that happen when we have to move from one state of consciousness to another. Right?
It's
This is going to
interesting because
happen.
you're doing it and it's far less pathologizing the way you're describing it than what I got from Jack Moran, that he tends to, his unfinished business tends to be trauma. And you're describing it in a way that isn't really about trauma. It's about how one moves from one state of consciousness to another.
That's right.
Yeah.
And horniness is an altered state of consciousness. You have to move from your contained self to losing yourself so that you can merge with another. So, my theory and practice, because it's not just a theory, it's a whole set of tools to be able to work with this, not just think about it and theorize about this. Is how do you actually create play scenes that are really powerful, experiences, sex that is really powerful? You have to understand what happens psychologically from moving from closed off to open. It's obviously going to be vulnerable to become open, isn't it? To
That's
lose your
correct.
sense of self, there's going to be a part of you that resists that because it feels scary. So my theory is that sexual fantasies are the exact story that our egos need to hear in order to be able to open up, let those guards down, so we can open up to the vulnerability of just purely experiencing pleasure and intimacy. And what I notice with these sex work experiences, those early experiences gave me the first clue, but later on I set up my own entire, like I got a lot more sophisticated with the thing. I went to Sydney and ended up with my own venue with, my own dungeon, my own sensual rooms and erotic massage rooms, and we created an entire experience for people to be able to explore their unique erotic wiring, bring that to life in embodied play. I got much more sophisticated at that, and we'd sit down and have them have a conversation before we'd start playing, and I'd ask them all about their sexual fantasies. But what I learned from, even from those early ones where they just wanted a busty blonde and I wanted money, was well, that's what it was. So
the Yiddish expression is "parnasa is parnasa," which means livelihood is livelihood. You know, you got to do what you got to do. No.
Even from those early ones, I noticed that really astonishing things would happen if I trusted and listened to their sexual fantasies. Mm-hmm. If instead of trying to make them holy or trying to make them fit into this model of how a good girl should behave, or how, you know, how I think a gentleman should behave, or what loving looks like. Like, I didn't try and put it in that. I was like, okay, I'm going to trust their mind. Why did their mind come up with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
What's going on in there? And if I just play it, let's just say this is a game. We're in a consensual container here. We've both agreed to be here. And it's a game. Mm-hmm. It's not real life. Like, it's not how we either of us want to be treated in everyday life. Mm-hmm. But if I trust this in the safe container of play, right, what happens? And astonishing things started to happen. People who just started with, you know, really crude requests to start with, you know, what do you look like? How much? Mm-hmm. Do you do this act or that act? Like, that's as much as they knew. By the time we finished our experience together, this kept happening over and over again, where both of us would be crying with astonishment at the place that we got to go to.
Yeah. That's the spirituality sense you're talking about in the title of your book, right? The sense that it is that notion of uniting with something much bigger than all of us is kind of the sort of experience you're providing people, it sounds like.
Yes, but at first I was just stumbling across it every now and again, and I didn't know how it worked. I had to break this down. How am I going to create a situation? What's happening? Here comes my anthropology brain, right?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
How does it all work? But I'm also a storyteller. I'm also somebody who loves to understand how stories work, and I read all of the books about how you would create a really good narrative. So instead of going to the psychology lens like Jack Moran did, I went to the storytelling lens, and I also went to my lived experiences that I had with other forms of altered states of consciousness, just like you were talking about then with hypnosis, meditation, plant medicines, psychedelic experiences, and also religious experiences from my childhood in you know, worshipping big churches full of, you know, music with hypnotic beats, and everybody, you know, swaying and chanting and singing love songs. All of these are things that can take us into altered states of consciousness. So I had quite a bit of experience with that. So I'm noticing, hey, there's a overlap here. There's something that's going on here. Sexual fantasies, they're actually a story that changes our state of consciousness. Every single time we move from one state to another, we experience some sort of internal resistance. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to meditate?
That's a great way of saying it. Tried to meditate. Right?
Yeah. That's my thing. Well, I have not. I have. Honestly say I have not.
I have. It's interesting because when I'll mention it to folks that I work with, you know, in couples or individuals that I've worked with, and people say, oh, I'm bad at it. And I will often point out, you do know that the actual practice that you're doing is the bringing yourself back from distraction. That is the practice. You're supposed to have that. It would be akin to sort of, you know, purling weights with no weights. You need the weights. Unless you're a Tibetan monk that's been meditating for 40 years, you probably are going to be distracted. And that is the work.
It is, right?
It's but indeed, it requires muscle. Effort. Yeah.
Does require effort. Mm-hmm. And sex doesn't. Well, the sexual fantasy doesn't. It takes away all of that effort that you'd normally have to do and takes you into a state that is beyond that normal sense of self. Yeah. It's really cleverly told, that story, that can actually get you really focused in the experience
yeah.
that can get you letting go of your normal sense of self and expanding to who you are beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is pretty impressive to find out. Like, that's a clever part of our brains coming up with stories that can do that.
Now, to do that, when you talk about, you know, letting yourself do that, that, you know, when, and I know you've talked about this, the notion that a lot of those sexual fantasies that people have are taboo. You know, they're not at all politically correct. They're not the way that people actually would want to be treated. And yet they will often have those fantasies. What's the statistic about women? And I speak to the two women in the room as the experts here. I think it's over 60%, right, of women have rape fantasies, something like that. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a very common thing. I've never met a woman who actually literally wanted to be raped.
Right.
But I've met lots of women who have that fantasy of being taken. And as you point that out in your, you point that out in the thing that I heard of your sample, where you talk about the fact that it's just amazing that in these fantasies of somebody being violently taken, the person taking them just happens to be touching them exactly the way they like.
Yes, amazing. So you want to talk a little bit about taboo fantasies?
Sure. Well, you've introduced a good one. Let's go with that one.
Okay.
that definitely confused me when I was younger. How on earth could I have like so much feminist rage at being mistreated and also really turned on by wanting to submit? How on earth could that make any sense whatsoever? I also wanted to dominate as well, but that made more sense to me. It's like, well, of course I want to be powerful. Like, that makes sense. My ego is quite happy with that one. But the other one didn't make any sense to me. I was like, why would I want to do that? But what I noticed is if you start to learn how stories work, all stories are desire-driven, not just sexual fantasies. All stories are desire-driven. The protagonist, the main character, has a desire to achieve something or there is no story.
Right.
So you don't have a story about everything's nice.
Right.
Nothing changed.
Exactly.
You know, there's something that's missing and we need to achieve it. And that creates a desire.
Mm-hmm.
And on the surface, they have a conscious desire and and they also have an unconscious desire they're not aware of. Mm. So, you know, it might be the story of, for instance, let's say Jack is trying to get to Las Vegas in time to win his wife back before she marries some other person. And on the surface, he's just trying to get to Las Vegas and do some grand gesture. But unconsciously, he's actually wanting to get past his own resistance of intimacy and treat her in a different way so that he can connect with her. But we, as listeners of the story, don't want to listen to that particular unconscious story. We want to see it played out.
Uh-huh.
But really, we want to see, you know, all of the ridiculous shenanigans Jack has with his best mate as they try and get there on time and all the things that get in the way and how they make a big mistake and how every other character in that story only exists in order to create an obstacle that forces the main character to transform so that he can actually achieve his desire by the time he gets to Las Vegas.
Mm.
That's how stories work. And then he can actually have his moment of connection that he's yearning for. He can actually stop being guarded and behaving in ways that was driving his wife away and open and connect. So sexual fantasies work in exactly the same way. They actually include our fears of vulnerability. And every character in your sexual fantasy will be there in order to support you getting in your desire or create an obstacle for you so that you can transform something and open to the thing you're trying to feel. That's what they're there for. So if you have a fantasy about having somebody else ravish you, how might that work? My theory says every fantasy includes the poison and the antidote. The poison is the fear of your ego. So it's your fear of that your self-worth is threatened. It's fear that your social status is threatened. It's fear that your identity, your self-identity is threatened. Let's just go with the identity one for a moment. I'm a good girl. I don't behave that way. I can't be primal. Mm-hmm. I can't access this part of myself. That will mean that it's too threatening. I might be a whore then. I might be cast out of society. I might lose my social status. I can't even allow myself to consciously want this. So I'm going to create a character that comes in and takes it from me against my will. And that means I get to stay a good girl and look, oh, they're taking it against me, taking it from me against my will, but they're giving me exactly what I really wanted. But it's not my fault. I'm still a good girl. That's just the beginning. Mm-hmm. That's something that's already been talked about quite a lot as well. But I'm looking at more layers. When you really look at this closely, at those three guards that are stopping you from opening to your vulnerability, there's this other thing that we need to navigate that's just inherently in. There's this double bind that is inherently in sexuality. No matter how perfect your childhood was, you're going to encounter this double bind. Sure. And you need to find a strategy to get around it. And that is, we want to be special. This is the self-worth guard. This is the one that we need to. We want to be special in order to feel as though we can't possibly be rejected, that we are worthy, that we don't need to be self-conscious and thinking about what they're thinking when our cellulite's wobbling everywhere and glee and bliss. We are also really, really considerate people. We want the other person to also have their needs met. Mm. We want to look after them. We actually like them. Mm-hmm. Unless you're actually a psychopath, we like the other person that we're having sex with. Even if they're a complete stranger, you have that level of humanity that the other person, you want them to be enjoying themselves. Mm-hmm. You want them to be enjoying themselves for their sake and also for ours. Because if they're enjoying themselves, then we can let go and enjoy as well. So sexual fantasies create this scenario where the other person just magically is sexually satisfied by what we need.
Right?
And they don't have any needs of their own. And there's a reason for that. It's because in order to be able to let go of your sense of self, let go of your ego, let go of your fear, you need to follow your own poisons and antidotes to be able to let go. You need to focus on yourself. Mm. You need to surrender fully into the experience and just feel. If you're worried about taking care of the other person, can you do that?
Yeah.
If you're right.
Yeah, that's I've often noted that with folks who will, I'll sometimes hear a woman in a heterosexual couple will sometimes say, I just want him to fuck me. I don't want him to be so damned considerate. And of course, she's not literally meaning she doesn't want the guy to be considerate, but the guy feels like he's in a double bind then because, you know, what she wants of him is that he lose himself in her. And he doesn't know how to do that because he wants to be considerate. And so he'll hold himself back or he'll worry about it and they'll both be dissatisfied. It's really, it's this kind of, like you said, a double bind where you have to be both selfish and giving at the same time.
Right. You have to be selfish and giving at the same time. It's impossible. You can't do it at the same time.
Yeah.
So you just can't. And that happens in all sorts of dynamics, like that whole absolutely focusing on giving the other person pleasure to the point where you can't focus on your own. Mm-hmm. And so you do give them a wonderful time, but you feel really good about that and you feel chuffed and proud, but you didn't actually surrender yourself. Mm-hmm. You didn't let go. Mm-hmm. You didn't get a chance to. And there's most of the time people are trying to meet each other's needs at the same time. Right. And that the example that you brought up was actually a really good one. It's saying, let's say that there is a heterosexual dynamic and the woman says, I just want him to fuck me, because that is a common one. Mm-hmm. I just want him to fuck me. And what she's unconsciously saying is, I just want him to touch me exactly the way he wants and be satisfied by that without having any needs of his own.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And have that magically be exactly the way she wants too.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And then she gets to feel special and her self-worth, like I'm wanted. Mm-hmm. Yes. I am the prize that of your desire. I don't have to do anything. I just am inherently valuable. And she gets to feel all sorts of things. And it happens exactly, it happens the other way around too. This is happening both ways at the same time, where most people are trying to, most people are not accessing anywhere near as far as they could go into erotic states of consciousness because of this double bind. They're trying to, so I learned from sexual fantasies. I said, okay, sexual fantasies actually created permission to be selfish for everyone.
Mm.
Like they created permission to give you, like, let's say that you're now fantasizing about somebody who's using you for sex.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking from you for their own benefit. You're just an object. You're just a sex object. They're just taking from you. But of course, they're taking from you in the ways that you actually want to be taken. But their selfishness convinces you that their needs are being met by meeting your needs. Mm. So you no longer have to caretake them. You no longer have to worry about what their experience is. You can just open and surrender into the moment. You can dance like nobody's watching. You can go for it. Right. So how are we going to, that real sex doesn't work like the fantasy does. Real sex doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so how do you create that then? Or how do you help people create that?
This is a big part of what I do, is I help people become aware that nobody has the same turn-ons. Nobody. That's a fantasy. Mm. Everybody needs their own unique pattern to overcome their own internal resistances to letting go, to moving from one state to another. So you have to take turns. We have to learn what each other's unique erotic wiring is. What is your narrative? And take turns and create that for each other. And one of the big things that we have to do then is create a new source of safety, because we had been relying unconsciously before on, oh, I can't share this part of me unless you're turned on by it.
Sure. Yeah.
Huh. Right.
Yeah. People are afraid to share for that very reason. Yeah. They worry that the other person's going to be not only not turned on, but put off or horrified by it.
Right. So yeah. You can't share your sexual fantasies, and you can't even just share your turn. I was like, I can't share my foot fetish with you if you're not into feet. That's just going to feel awkward if you're like, you're just acting. It's not real. You're just pretending. And then they're stuck, and then they don't move forward. And then they think they need to break up and only ever be with someone who's into feet.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing is, that's the wrong way around of looking at things. You're going to spend your whole life trying to find this mythological person who's just magically into exactly what you are, because everybody's ego is different. So everybody needs a different sexual fantasy or a different pattern of turn-ons in order to overcome their ego.
Mm.
Nobody's is going to be the same ever. You might have a good amount of overlap, or not enough. If you've got not enough, you can't work together. Mm-hmm. But if you've got a good amount of overlap of similar things in your narrative, there's still going to be a Venn diagram, isn't it? It's still mm-hmm. going to be only some of the things are the same together. What do you do with the rest of your turn-ons that are mm-hmm. really important parts of the story that help you to let go? Do you mm-hmm. just cut them off?
Well, and that's really what a lot of couples do. And that yeah. I describe it in one of my books is the death spiral for passion. Although it's funny, I don't describe it in the terms you just did. And I got to go back and think about that, as I'm writing further. But that is what happens, is people will then reduce their level of intimacy because they have to yeah. suppress a lot of it. And it ends up feeling sort of dead.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. And you can only ever get so far. You can get to a certain level of horny and then you just don't get far. But what was happening in sex work is I was focusing 100% on their turn-ons because I was getting paid. So I didn't care, care about mine. So what happened in that situation was I get to go into a flow state of play. So I was letting go and actually playing and really enjoying the play of the situation, because I was wired to find them fascinating and wanting to work them out, and we've got a total thrill at the end by having figured it out, like that walking mm-hmm. into that improv acting thing and conquering it. Woohoo!
Mm-hmm.
So I was in this flow state of play, and I was focusing on their turn-ons only, and I was following their internal narrative from beginning to end. So it actually naturally showed me their turn-ons, their fantasies showed me the map. Uh-huh. It showed me exactly what each, how their particular ego was going to let go. And I would not try and act out their fantasies, but I would create an experience that would have the same effect for them.
Mm-hmm.
So if they needed to feel used and selfish, as though I was doing it for me, in order to believe that I was into it so that they could then let go, then I would take on that body language and attitude no matter what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that would then create, they would then get to follow their story all the way to the end. Mm. And that then expanded where they could go inside of themselves. They didn't get partway into an altered state of consciousness. They were now starting to get into profound erotic states of consciousness, mm-hmm. where they had lost their sense of self, and to the point where we didn't know where they finished and I began.
Mm-hmm.
And so we merged together into this flow of play, and beyond that, into this experience of oneness, feeling connected with everything. Mm-hmm. These same sort of experiences I was getting in those worship services at church, mm-hmm. when I was a young person, that opening to that, you know, that astonishment you feel when you look into the night sky and see if infinity and feel so small, you lose yourself. Mm-hmm. And you're like a sense of wow, this wow, that mm-hmm. feeling. So actually following people's fantasies all the way to the end, mm-hmm. is a really valuable thing to do.
Mm.
So that's what I do. I teach now some of the most elite sex workers, professional dominatrices. I teach sexologists. I teach, and I have an awful lot of therapists who I don't actually officially teach therapists, but they seek me out. There's lots of them.
So that was one of the things I wanted to ask you, is how you help therapists deal with sexual fantasies.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, having a whole new framework to understand them is going to help their clients. But also I have tools. It's not just a theory. Everything I do is about embodiment and somatic stuff. So even the learning is on a somatic level. We do exercises together on Zoom, which that they can now also use for their with their clients, so that they can help their clients feel, can you feel this mechanism here? Oh, yes. Oh, I can feel that working. Oh, mm-hmm. oh yes, that works. It's through the doing and the play that the magic happens.
The example of yours that I heard, I'm wondering, is this is the sort of thing you do? Because you told that story, you told two different stories, and you were inquiring as you did it on the tape, you were inquiring, are you feeling, you know, how are you feeling right now? Or what are you feeling in your body? What are you feeling in your stomach and in your shoulders and whatever else? And it was really quite interesting how you would somaticize it. I guess that's the word. You would situate it in the body so that you could tell, oh, I'm getting excited hearing this story. And now I know what that feels like. Is that the sort of thing you do when you're teaching folks?
Yes, absolutely. And you would resonate with that as a hypnotist. Using guided visualization can actually absolutely transform you physically, emotionally, and psychologically, and take you somewhere inside of yourself. So telling a beautiful story can actually help people become aware of things. But there's actual movement exercises, breath exercises. There's all sorts of techniques that we do. And I help people shift their sense of safety so that they no longer need to have their partner have exactly the same turn-ons as them. They now know how they can get into genuine nervous system sync of play flow state together. And I want to be here doing this with you now and believe it, and take turns focusing on one person's erotic narrative all the way to the end, hitting all of the poisons and antidotes, hitting the emotional aphrodisiac journey, getting the body language and attitude involved in the play. Mm. And it's not about acting, it's about playing. It's about drawing an aspect of yourself up and exploring it deliciously together. You know how to do that when you're a child. Mm-hmm. You know how to explore different things easily. And it is pretending it's, but it's not like you don't go, it's fake, it's acting, when the little kid mm-hmm. grabs a towel and puts it on their head, around their neck and says, I'm Superman.
Yeah.
They've gone into this. And they've become Superman with just that simple towel prop.
Mm-hmm.
And this play state can take you as deep as I'm turned on by the same turn-ons as you.
Mm-hmm.
So this shift is quite a powerful thing to do.
Wow. Yeah. I'm struck by your use of, you were mentioning a lot of the work you were doing is like improv. And I have a section in one of my books where I talk about therapy as improv. But the couples mm-hmm. therapy in particular is improv. There's a setup, but then you're doing the yes and thing. You know, it's like the one rule of improv is just yes and. It's you go with it, much as you're saying, you go with the whole narrative. You don't challenge it or try and redirect it. You just go with it and add whatever you want to add. And
yes,
when couples yes. first come to see me, they're not in that state. They're in the no damn it state rather than the yes and state. And but the therapist can be in the yes and state all the way through and provide that structure where people can let themselves be who they are. It reminds me so very it much.
Sounds like what you're yeah. saying too.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the sexual.
Yeah, thing. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and the sexual.
You thing. Don't want to be stuck having to live out a script. That's awful. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to understand the particular ingredients of their story and then get creative with it. Like a writer who understands a genre, you need to know what needs to be included in a romance genre, or it's not a romance.
Mm,
it has yeah. to have this and this and this ingredient, but you can tell a billion different stories once mm-hmm. you know those ingredients.
Yeah.
And once you know each other's erotic wiring, you're not stuck doing the same thing over and over again. You've now, you've unlocked a door that's actually a well that's never going to dry out mm-hmm. of ways to explore this together. And it's really one of the most intimate things you can do. To be able to create a safe space to bring the truth of your own inner workings out to each other and share it with each other. Mm. It's such a source of intimacy. It's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were going to ask, I think, about inside.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. In one of the podcasts that you were a guest on, you had mentioned an insidegasm.
Oh, an insightgasm.
Oh, insightgasm.
Oh, I thought you said
I wondered about insightgasm. Well, tell us about that.
Yes. What is an insightgasm?
Oh, well, I absolutely get a full body and emotional response that actually does open a little portal to an older state of consciousness when I get an insight. Like it feels like a download. Like it's like, oh, that's how it works. Uh-huh. Oh, that's beautiful. Wow.
Yeah.
And I can end up running around the house like a cat doing zoomies because it's so fun.
That experience when I was a math major early on in my university career, I would experience that on occasion. I never thought to call them insightgasms. I like that. Like little satori, like a zen, these little moments of, and all of a sudden you're open. And of course, orgasms are very much like that.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's
yeah. Okay,
that explains it. Yes. So how can people get in touch with you, and how can they, I think your book is not quite out yet. I think, is that right?
That's right. It's upcoming. So if you're on my mailing list, you'll absolutely get the red carpet VIP so that you can find out all about when that's happening. Mm-hmm. And the best way to get on my mailing list is actually to go and get yourself my freebie. And there's the freebie that we already talked about here in this session. There's another one coming up as well, which is actually going to walk you through how to start unpacking your own fantasy and using images from Google search, where you look up a celebrity that you find attractive and you find several pictures of them. And even though they're exactly the same body and exactly the same level of attractiveness in all of them, you're going to be drawn to some more than others. Why? What's that going to reveal about your particular turn-ons and how to activate them? Let's look at the body language. Let's look at the power dynamic. Let's see how you get to feel when you're imagining they're looking at you in that one compared to that one. What's different? What's going on there? I'll walk you through how to do that. and what to notice and the kinds of questions to ask yourself and take notice of, so that you, and a way that you can just start beginning to explore this already in your sex life and notice how that changes where you can go inside of yourself.
Mm-hmm. And how do people get that?
Yeah, what's your website so we can direct people?
Very good point. Excellent point. You can go to myfantasyis.com to get my freebie. If you're interested in working with me, you can go to artemisiadivine.com, and I work with sexperts but also more advanced self-discovery lovers, people who really want to use the erotic as a lens to explore the depths of themselves and share that with their lovers as well.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well,
thank you so much for doing this. This has been delightful.
I really enjoyed myself. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we enjoyed having you too. Thank you so much. Well, we hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as we enjoyed having Artemisia on our podcast.
She was just wonderful. We really were. It was fascinating. Just a few words in closing here. Buy our books. Go to our website and send us a message. Tell other people all about our podcast. And you can do all that by going to CTN7, that's the number 7, CTN7.com. And we would love to hear from you. If you have ideas for topics you would like us to treat on this podcast, we would love to hear from you.
Or if you would like to be a guest on our podcast, write to us and tell us why.
Yes, indeed. And if you have questions or specific situations you'd like us to address, we've done that quite a bit over the years we've been doing this, we would love to hear from you. And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.